Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and he's Robin Hood Radio's Ours All Ours critic and guide. He joins us weekly. The films are Mass, Halloween Kills, and I'm Your Man. Hi, David.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing this week?
This is a good agglomeration of titles. I think it's quite interesting.
I'm not sure you could make a novel out of them, but you could make maybe a little haiku or something. That said, the movies could not be too much more different from one another. So let's plunge in. They're very different, varieties of things this week. But they're all playing and they're all out and they're all of interest for one reason or another. The first one, I think, that I want to talk about, Mass, is the most interesting of the three. It's a really, really interesting movie. And at a time when some people, sometimes including me, despair that there's hardly anything being done in the movies for real grown-ups anymore, this is a very grown-up movie in every way, in style, in content, in subject. It's really a thoughtful movie. It's not a masterpiece, don't get me wrong, but it's a really, really interesting and involving film that's beautifully done. So, Mass, written and directed by a new filmmaker named Fran Kranz. This is his first feature, and it has a very slow build. That's one thing you have to be ready for when you watch Mass. It takes a long time. We meet one by one. We meet one or two characters who we think, well, they're going to be the main characters in the movie, and then they hardly show up again until the very, very end of the thing. And then we meet a couple of other characters who are driving to this church where almost the entire movie takes place in their car, and we can see that they're very troubled and they're very conflicted about something. A middle-aged husband and wife, and we're not sure just what it is that's going on, and the wife is saying things like, I don't think I can say it, and we don't know what that refers to. And then they get to this little church where this meeting is going to be held. The church has agreed to provide space. It's a very modest little Episcopalian church, and for some reason there's a woman who, again, we think might be a major character of the film, who turns out to be a very minor character, who has helped these people kind of set up this meeting, and this church has agreed to provide some space. And then another middle-aged couple shows up, another husband and wife. They turn out to be separated, but they show up together, and you still have no idea what's going on here. There's going to be some sort of a meeting between these four people, and there's a whole lot of which I found, by the way, quite fascinating, this slow build. It really draws you in and gets you wondering. There's a lot of talk about, is the choir going to be rehearsing upstairs during our meeting because we'd rather not have the distraction, things like that. Eventually, the two middle-aged couples sit down around this little table, and the others leave the room, and the meeting starts, and there's a lot of small talk, and, you know, how have you been, and, oh, here's a picture of our daughter, and doesn't she look grown up, and anyway, all this is, like me right now, goes on for a very long time, a very slow build, and eventually it becomes painfully clear why they are there. One of these couples, the couple that happens to be separated now, their son was a school shooter, and their son killed a bunch of people with his gun. And one of the people killed was the son of the other couple who are in this meeting. And they're getting together for this meeting to try to somehow clear the air, to create some sense of, to use that trendy word nowadays, closure. We find out that the couple whose son was killed have not sued the other couple. They've not joined the class action whatnots and so forth. They were not interested in that. They just somehow want to get to the bottom of this. They somehow want to find out why this happened. They want to express their own grief. They want to express their own wonderment at the cruelty of the world, etc. And the bulk of the movie, after this very slow build, consists of this very long, very thoughtful and very emotional conversation among these four people. It is not full of melodrama. People don't get hysterical. People don't start screaming and bashing their head against the wall. None of that kind of thing happens. It's thoughtful conversation, not intellectual conversation, but very thoughtful, introspective conversation by four people who are all trying to get some sort of perspective on this horrible thing, which happened in the past, but not that terribly far in the past. And we find that the couple whose son committed this horrible crime are in their way just as devastated and just as mournful and just as melancholy about the whole thing as the couple whose son was killed. We don't find out everything about the characters I would have liked to know. For example, we never find out what these people do for a living. One of them has flown in, so he's apparently doing pretty well, even though they're the ones who apparently were sued to pieces by a whole lot of victims of their son's mass murder. So, you know, that's the little mysteries and little things I wished had been cleared up. I wished you'd get a little more insight into these four people besides what, you know, the horrible thing that happened. Interestingly, but that said, the movie is a very thoughtful and really interesting movie in so many ways. The title Mass apparently refers to more than one thing. It was a mass slaying. On the other hand, they're in a church, although it's not a Roman Catholic church. You know, they're having a sort of a little private mass of their own. And that kind of thing lends a little extra thoughtfulness to the movie. I mentioned the writer-director, Fran Kranz, but I also have to mention the actors. Really, really, really excellent. Anne Dowd, who plays one of the women. She is probably best known for The Handmaid's Tale, where she plays the sinister Aunt Lydia, but she's been in a lot of other things. She's a really, really gifted actor. Martha Plimpton, who I haven't seen a whole lot in recent years, but she's really good, and she just carries this role extremely well. The two men are played by Reed Birney, who is mainly a stage actor, and Jason Isaacs. Wonderfully acted movie, and this is a performance-driven movie, a dialogue-driven movie, a theme-driven movie. It has nothing in the way of action, nothing in the way of the kind of things that most movies nowadays trade in all too much, and I just found it enormously refreshing. I repeat, it's not a masterpiece, but it's a really good, thoughtful, slightly troubling movie about a very real and urgent subject in today's everyday world. And I just really recommend it. Mass, a first-rate movie and one of the better movies to come so far this year. Now, let's plunge into the ridiculous, Jill. Halloween Kills. Halloween is approaching. As we have this episode of our show. And the Halloween people are back in business. Halloween all started way back in 1978. And oh, this new movie, Halloween Kills, reminds us of that endlessly. We're constantly having returns, flashbacks, mentions, discussions of what happened way back in 1978 and on various occasions since then. It all started in 1978 with a movie by John Carpenter. It's the movie that put John Carpenter on the map as an extremely promising young filmmaker. And I really liked the Halloween film, 1978. I thought it was really good. I really liked the way a lot of it seemed to focus on babysitting logistics and that sort of thing. And also, it was pretty horrifying as a horror movie goes. It delivered. And it introduced this notion of the horrible killer who is totally psychotic and who seems to kill people as if the people were just objects. And we have what's called in film studies the unclaimed point of view, where the camera is looking through the eyes of somebody and we don't even know whose eyes they are yet, and that sort of thing. A very good movie, Halloween from 1978. I recommend it. Another thing that movie had was a leading performance by Jamie Lee Curtis. And oh, she has just been returning to this, what has now become a total franchise ever since. So there have been all kinds of sequels and reboots and this is and that's of Halloween, which makes sense since it was a very successful film that really started something big back in 1978. One of the remakes was done just a few years ago by the very interesting filmmaker, well, sometimes interesting, named David Gordon Green. And it was simply called Halloween. And it was around 3 years ago. And David Gordon Green is a very interesting, again, sometimes interesting filmmaker. He started his career with a really interesting film several years ago, quite a few years ago, called George Washington, which has nothing to do with George Washington. And it was a high school movie, and it was very, very idiosyncratic and atmospheric and elliptical and just fascinating. I totally recommend looking that one up. George Washington by David Gordon Green. Since then, every now and again, he makes a really interesting, elliptical, offbeat, outside the big usual formulas type movie. But he also really knows how to make just an ordinary commercial product. And his movie Halloween a few years ago was an ordinary commercial product. I think that the original Halloween in 1978 was a commercial product, but not an ordinary one in its day. David Gordon Green's Halloween was a very ordinary commercial project. So now we have Halloween Kills, the sequel to the reboot. And oh my gosh, it is just such an ordinary commercial product. Jamie Lee Curtis is back. She seems to be back in so many of these things, and she is still trying so hard to battle and finally overcome somehow the horrible monster Michael Myers. We also have Will Patton, who's been a member of this franchise for quite a number of years now as Officer Hawkins. He's a wonderful actor who I always like. There's good people in this movie. People like Will Patton, people like Jamie Lee Curtis, several others as well. They're really good. That said, the movie is snappy. It's energetic. It delivers on the gore, on the violence, on the shocks, but it's just so bound by formulas. There's just nothing in it that's truly surprising. So again, as much as I like some of the performances and as much as I like, oh, you know, the franchise, I have a certain lingering affection for, and I have to mention Anthony Michael Hall is really good as a character named Tommy Doyle. I have to mention him too. The movie is just basically just the same old formulas being done again with verve, with energy, with a certain amount of pizzazz, but not a shred of originality. I wish Halloween Kills were better, but I'm afraid I think it ought to be killed, but let's not go there. Our final movie for today is called I'm Your Man, and it is really good. I just had such a nice time watching it. It's a fantasy. It's a sort of a comedy, but it's very, very low-key, very gentle, very understated, and I just really enjoyed it. It's a German movie by the German filmmaker Maria Schrader, who wrote it also with a couple of co-screenwriters. The German title is Ich bin dein Mensch. And yes, the English language title is I'm Your Man. And we have here, and this is not spoiler stuff because this all happens in the very beginning of the movie, we have here a woman who is, I guess she's an archaeologist, and she is working on deciphering ancient inscriptions. And that's the work she does, and there's a team she works with, and they have a sort of a lab, and we see her at work, and we see the things that she does. But she's also sort of on the side participating in a really interesting experiment. There's a company that has developed these really excellent humanoid robots, androids, and they are meant to be companions for people. And she has agreed to be involved in testing one of their prototype models. And it has been designed with her in mind. So this prototype android, the name of it is Tom, and her name is Alma, by the way. This android has been designed to be the man of her dreams, basically. And so now she's going to test it out and see if that's really true, if this really is the man, or rather the android of her dreams. And that's what the movie is going to be about. And that's what the movie is about. So we have the interactions between Alma, the real person, and Tom, the android. And there turns out to be another android or two in the movie. And that comes as a little bit of a surprise here and there along the way. But mainly it's about the relationship between these two. And it's the kinds of things that you expect in a movie like this. What if she really did find herself falling in love with him? Well, I mean, after all, he is only a machine. Is he capable of falling in love with her? After all, he is only a machine. What is the relationship going to be? Is it going to turn out to be okay? Is it going to turn out to be tragic? Are we going to have a lot of bitterness? Are we going to have just a lot of fun? What's this going to be? So watching those different possibilities unfold and we see which ones become dominant and which ones fade away is all kind of interesting. At times, the movie reminded me of one of the great android movies of all time, and I'm not thinking about Blade Runner. It didn't remind me of Blade Runner much at all, but it did remind me a very great deal of Steven Spielberg's movie, AI, Artificial Intelligence, which is a flawed but really interesting and complex movie about the question of how much humanity there can really be in an artificial human being. But I'm Your Man goes in very different directions. It's really a very gentle romantic comedy. It's beautifully acted. Maren Eggert is just excellent as Alma. She gives a very sweet, likable, amiable performance. Dan Stevens couldn't be better as Tom. He's got all the perfection that you need. He's just the perfect man. He just is handsome and witty. And by the way, these androids, they know everything. So he can tell you, he can tell you any fact you want to know off the drop of a hat. That's one of the amusing things about him. And it plays off against the work that Alma does as a translator and an archaeologist as well. Sandra Huller is in the movie as an employee of the company that developed this android. And she's also really good. And she turns out to be one of the more surprising characters. There's little plots and subplots in here. There's a former lover of Alma's who becomes an interesting character and who becomes a jealous of Tom. There are people who don't realize at first that Tom is an android, and we have little comical bits developed along that line. But mainly, I'm Your Man is a gentle fantasy comedy that's meant for grown-ups. There's no action in it. There's no uproarious slapstick humor in it. It's just a nice movie with a nice atmosphere and a nice mood and nice characters that deals in a mildly thoughtful way with a very interesting subject, which may become relevant to all of our lives one of these years. Androids may be coming along. We'll find out. Anyway, I really enjoyed I'm Your Man. So of the movies I've talked about today, Jill, MASS is the one I really recommend. I'm Your Man is the sort of the nice little hors d'oeuvre or maybe palate cleanser afterwards. They're both really good movies, and I'm so glad that they're both out this year. And so that is my somewhat grown-up story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as ever and always, grown-up David Sterrett with Films in Focus, the films MASS, Halloween Kills, and I'm Your Man.